Hi, this is James Mercer from The Shins.
This is Shirley Manson.
This is Lo Tullist, co-founder of The Cure.
This is Huey Lewis giving you the story behind the song.
The Story Behind the Song is back with an exciting second season. We peel back the layers on music's most iconic hits with legendary artists like The Killers, Heart, The B-52s, Violent Femmes, Jewel, Huey Lewis, Modern English, and more. To keep the music flowing, we'll be sprinkling in classic episodes from our archives between each new one. So check out The Story Behind the Song wherever you get your podcast.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
You guys, right, you're Smith Governor.
Broadcasting live and direct from the rolling red hills on the outskirts of Kingston, Jamaica. From a magical place at the intersection of words, sound, and power. The red light is on. Your dial is set. The frequency in tune to the Rootsland podcast. Stories that are music to your ears.
In the reggae anthem Get Up Stand Up, the Wailers sing, "Not all that glitters is gold. Half the story has never been told. My friend Brian always dreamed he could make the world a better place. Maybe by me telling his story, he still can."
Consequence Podcast Network presents Rootsland Season 1, Reggae Junkie Joe.
Whole barrage of righteous people out there.
Because sometimes the story is the best song.
Do you read Stephen King? Good news, there's a club for you. The Losers Club. Every Friday, us losers journey through the never-ending wastelands of King's Dominion. We sink our teeth into each of King's novels, dive deep into the lore, and review every adaptation. Even better, we're always having guests over. Thomas Jane, Will Wheaton, Mary Lambert, Mick Garris, the list goes on. So what are you waiting for? Join us as we read on through long days and pleasant nights.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with the interview series presented by WFPK, WFPK.org, Consequence of Sound, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Hey, thanks for making your way here, checking out the series. I know there are a lot of airlines that you can fly today, and we appreciate you choosing ours. No, but seriously, if you're into artist interviews, you like diving behind the scenes and seeing how it's all made, hit that subscribe button because we put three new interviews out every single week. A brand new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, so you can keep up with all of your favorite artists, maybe discover some new ones, or at least just know what's happening in the music world. iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, The Weather Station, going to be talking with Tamara Lindemann about this new record called Ignorance. This is one that finds what, well, she's typically a folk artist, but taking on a new beat-driven sound. Piano, she's writing with piano as the lead instrument for the first time. And we also talk about the local avant-garde scene in Toronto, where she's based, the jazz scene up there. There's a lot of jazz elements on this, even though it's what you would call her poppiest album to date. There's kind of her version of pop songs. But think about it, as I kind of project here in this interview, in the way of David Bowie's final album, Black Star. And I found a lot of similarities between the two records. I want to hear about writing cinematically, something she does quite well, maybe because she has an acting past, maybe just because that's how she writes. We'll find that out as well. And then there's the other side of this record, the themes. While it's a personal record, there is an intersection between those personal statements and speaking on a global scale. And I'm talking about climate change, truth, trust. All three of those creep up throughout this record plenty of times. So we'll hear about that side of it and the upcoming live stream that she's going to be doing. I want to hear what that's going to be like as well. So let's do this. Talking about the record Ignorance, it's Kyle Meredith with The Weather Station.
Thank you so much.
Your last record was my favorite record at that moment. I mean, we played 30, I think, so much at WFPK, and I don't get tired of that. It should be pointed out right away, this record ain't that. This is a different thing here, which you've been talking a lot about, and I guess it starts with rhythm. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the self-titled, you know, it was a cool record, and it was very much grown out of, you know, folk music and like live music, essentially music that happens with people in a room together, and it was very idiosyncratic, and it came out of my personally idiosyncratic sense of rhythm and time, and I just felt like I'd sort of outgrown that as a thing, and I was playing a lot of live music, and I realized like I got excited about the idea of letting the drummer actually set the time and be more like a vocalist, you know, flowing with their time instead of setting the time myself. And yeah, I got enamored with how emotional, you know, straight propulsive rhythm can be. I think I didn't hear that as emotional before. And then it finally hit me.
I hadn't thought of it in a specific way, but as I was kind of reading about you talking, you know, similar moments about what you're talking about now, the way artists, I guess you call them drone artists, you know, John Cale, maybe one of the most famous of it, but any in that, sort of they would talk about that similarly, how, you know, that baseline repetition allows you so much movement otherwise.
Yeah, I started to think of it as like a foundation, you know, and like, whereas the self-titled, like there was no foundation, like everything was constantly moving, which I think is cool. It's a very organic record, but this, I was like, what if it's like a bedrock and then there's all these soft things kind of layered on top, flowing around.
You know, dance has come up a lot in what you're talking about. I haven't seen much about jazz, and maybe it was because, you know, the brass on this record or the arrangements and the movements, but it does seem like to me like jazz. I mean, do you have a background in that at all?
No, but I am in Toronto where I live. There's a really, the music scene that I'm a part of and that I go to see and that I watch is primarily like fairly avant-garde jazz musicians. Like it's, I don't know if anyone in the music scene would say that they were playing jazz. I don't know what they say they do, but they all went to jazz school. And so there's a really strong influence in Toronto of like, yeah, very, very complicated music. And that's the music that I tend to go see. So I think it was just natural that want some of those people to come play on the record and also just be interested and curious in that and take little pieces of it for myself.
Yeah, it's very much in the tradition of that final David Bowie record with Black Star. I mean, when I hear this record, it's that kind of jazz that I hear about it. It's dark isn't the right word. I mean, there are dark moments on here, but it's just the way it moves. It's so interesting.
Well, that's interesting because I haven't heard that record and people have mentioned that a few times. So I got to listen to it.
You have to listen to it. That's a great one.
Yeah.
I'll ask this one, not because you have an acting past, but the other side of when I listen to this, there is a cinematic element to it. And I wondered if that plays a part of it when you're writing a song. Like, do you see a song cinematically as you're writing it?
Yeah, you know, I actually do. And that's something that I wasn't really using or thinking about for several records. I mean, like all of it was mine, you know, all the folkier eras. I was more just thinking about like lyrics and performance and that being everything. But my very first record I made myself, like I recorded everything myself, and it was like a lot of these like big sound palettes, I guess, just experiments. And in making that record, I remember thinking, like, I do kind of have a visual sense of like, it's almost like a painting, you know, or a landscape. And what does the landscape look like? And I think something I was thinking a lot about on this record was the way that, like, if you look at like a patch of ground, you know, the form of natural forms are so complicated, and there's so many things going in so many different directions, you know, like leaves and branches. I mean, like the cover of the album, you know, for example, like if you just zoom in on a square of that, I was thinking of those sort of images and landscapes and textures, I guess.
You paint it really, really well. I mean, you know, whether that comes naturally, and I think, again, some of that also comes not just from the sounds and from what you're doing lyrically and vocally, but from those arrangements I was getting at. And we have that romantic image of the artist in the room, you know, strumming away or plucking away or whatever, and it comes naturally. But this mathematically is not the right word, but what was the arrangement process on this? Because it does seem a bit more complicated than, you know, things in the past.
Yeah, it was super convoluted. I mean, I seem to do everything the hard way. And so the first thing I tried to do was I decided I was going to make arrangements myself on a computer and then force a band to play them. Like I was going to make like MIDI arrangements. And I lost months to like trying to program. Like I was trying to like learn about drum machines and use, you know, the 16 steps and try to like construct a beat and like bass lines and all of this stuff. I didn't complete that approach, but I did attempt it. Like I got a band together and it was like 7 or 8 people, and we got together in a room and I was like, okay, you play this, you play this, you play this. And you know, it would have been amazing if I was better with MIDI and was like a virtuoso of arrangement, but I was like trying to do too many things at once. However, there's a couple songs like Where the World, for example, like that arrangement was my MIDI arrangement. And a lot of the string arrangements, like it was nice because I'd already sort of been playing around with arrangement before we went in the studio. So a bunch of the string arrangements and some bass line stuff and some drum stuff was already worked out. But I just got a really good band together, and like it was a good fit where they were very generous with, you know, my ideas and executing them, but also bringing a lot to the table. So the final arrangement, it was some mixture of things I'd come up with beforehand and things that the band came up with in the moment, and then, you know, overdub things, and then the strings were like written, like I had to like write them with MIDI, because that's the way strings are. But yeah.
And you did, I mean, instead of guitar, you did the primary writing on the piano this time around, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how did that actually, or I should say, did it change the way you approach a song when you started with that instrument instead?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's because I actually wasn't even writing on a piano. I was actually just writing on like a toy keyboard, like with a drum machine. And I kind of just did it because I was kind of had writer's block. Like nothing was really coming on guitar. And my partner had this keyboard and he's like, why don't you try writing on this? And I did. And suddenly I was just writing these like pop songs, kind of like, you know, like tried to tell you, you know, these very different songs were coming out. And it totally changed it. It in part in the beginning, it was because like I did take piano lessons when I was a kid, but I hadn't played really piano for many years. So part of it was that I was just putting my hands on the keys and not really knowing what I was playing, which is always a good way to break out of your habits. And part of it was just, yeah, like rhythmically a piano is really different. Like guitar, you know, I'm a fingerstyle guitar player, and fingerstyle guitar, I switched to this weird strumming thing that I made up for the self-titled, but either of those approaches rhythmically like gives you a specific rhythm, and it's difficult to break out of that. So piano just gave me like chords and melody and let the rhythm be something else, which was nice.
I'll invoke the album title here with Ignorance. I mean, not like there are so many great stories in like music history, and I'm thinking like REM, you know, Peter Buck had never played the mandolin before, and the first thing he composes is ends up being Losing My Religion, you know, and Pete Townsend had never played ukulele before, and you get Blue, Red, and Gray as a Who song, and it's kind of it's those the ignorance allows you to feel free to do something sometimes simplistic, and I don't want to overpaint because this record isn't simple, sure. But yeah.
But the song, some of the songs are really simple, and like, you know, their chord structures that, like, since I made this record, I've been learning piano, and I've been learning like theory on piano. And when I sit down to piano, I never play like 1-4-5 now, because I know what I'm doing. But when I was making this record, I was just like, that sounds nice, and turns out it's 1-4-5 again. But yeah, I think I have been thinking about that a lot lately, where, you know, I've never had expertise in any aspect of music. Like, I didn't go to school, I didn't go to recording school. Like, all of my expertise is essentially like eternal and learned on, like, internal and learned on the job. And I often come into things with like a naivete. Like, I tend to feel like all the musicians around me know, they have way broader references, and they have deeper knowledge, and they have language that they can use. And, but I think I've just, maybe it's a coping strategy, but I've started to see my naivete with some aspects of music as an asset of like, if I'm coming to something with like a fresh ear and just being like, that piques my interest, I'm going to take that. That's almost better than having like a deep knowledge of, you know, everything that's ever happened in music history.
Because once you know too much, I feel that anyway, it becomes harder to write. Like, no, that's been done. That's too simple, that's or whatever. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the strength of ignorance. While we're there, I'll flip that over and everything, obviously, because that's, the title does have a much deeper meaning, as I understand, you know, from what I've read from this. I mean, the, you know, the two sides of it being a blessing and a curse. Truth, yes. Trust, they come up on this record at a time when both are questioned on a global level. And I guess, I mean, the micro and macro colliding, it's a personal record that speaks to something much, much bigger. What was it like writing, using that as a writing technique?
Yeah, it was interesting because I kept writing songs and not really knowing, like, I was like, is this a song about, you know, this political thing that's occurring right now? Or is this a song about me? Sometimes I wasn't even sure. I was like, are these my feelings? Or are these just feelings that are around me that I can't help but feel? You know, I am a very porous person, and like the collective experience affects me, I think, as it does everyone else. But yeah, I mean, it's a very deep, it's a very strange time, and trust and truth and ignorance and denial are very, very powerful. And I think nothing can be more intense of an illustration of that than like climate change. Like, it's just I think that the way that I started to see the world when I was writing this record was very disorienting, like a very disorienting, like radicalized perspective, just from having done a bunch of reading about the climate crisis, of just like what our whole society is based on denial, essentially. Like, nothing, like, we're not paying, now we kind of are, like, honestly, like, things have changed a lot in the last 2 years, but we're behaving as though, you know, our world is going to be the same, you know, 20 years from now. And it's not, like, we're walking into a absolute wilderness of dark things occurring, and we're not behaving that way. And it's just so odd to be living in this society where, you know, financial advisors and accountants and, you know, people can look you in the eye and tell you to think about the future. And you're like, but what about everything though? You know, I mean, denial is just such a powerful force that seems to be driving our entire society. I mean, I know I sound crazy, but you know what? So I think the emotional quality of the songs is a lot of them are about, yeah, people not being able to see, people not wanting to see, people seeing for the first time. I mean, I think that's sort of, and also the sort of like betrayal aspect is very heavy in the songs, of where do you have to get to in your heart to, you know, actively choose to destroy something. I mean, these are the feelings I was thinking about when I was writing the record.
Which are all valid. It's feelings that make complete sense. And I think that's probably why a lot of us are finding solace within these songs. I
mean, yeah.
Relating to them very easy. I had wondered, you know, since you wrote this, because you wrote this in 2019 and here it arrives in 2021. And on one sense, things have only gotten worse. And another sense, you know, we're hopeful that some things are getting better. Does the album begin to say anything different for you now than if you had released it 2 years ago? Like, I was thinking, like, you have this unusual hindsight in real time.
Yeah. I mean, definitely there's a few lines. Like, I didn't know, obviously, a pandemic was going to occur when I wrote, like, Atlantic, like, where the chorus talks about dying. That lyric hits me weirdly now in the pandemic. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I was worried, you know, I was like, will this record even make sense, you know, in this brave new world we're living in? But it does seem to. Yeah, I don't know. It's very strange with music. I mean, my records have often in my own life, like, foreseen things that I wasn't aware of, which I think is just a matter of the subconscious is often, you know, a few miles ahead of us. And often that's where the songs come from on some level.
It's like all the greatest sci-fi writers. I mean, the stuff that they wrote about 100 years ago, you know, and here we are in these I'm trying not to get too heady on this, you know, but those moments where it does become the society of the future. And then suddenly you're looking around going, oh, wait, this is a version of that. This is a version of that society.
I mean, I definitely feel like the last year or two has been really interesting. I mean, I think that this through line I keep talking about denial and ignorance. I mean, obviously there's like legit ignorance like occurring, you know, in the form of conspiracy theories that are literally like threatening our way of life and our societies. But, you know, on the flip side, like it does feel like COVID has brought so much into awareness for people in a way where I feel a lot less alienated in the world in my perspective, and that I feel like many people are experiencing that stripping away of the wool from one's eyes. And in terms of understanding like how fragile our world is and how fragile our society is and how much we're not valuing the things that matter. And so I feel like my perspective feels more mainstream right now, which is nice.
I also like how you, there are moments in here, a few moments where you inject the songwriter as the character into the song. Tried to tell you, I think has one of those moments that really stood out. I'm looking at the words here. Only fools believe this is what songs are for.
Oh yeah.
And I feel like there was a couple other times in there. Did you notice that was happening as the songwriter? What is that sort of, it's not really a fourth wall, but it's kind of in that vein.
Well, I think I was thinking, like I was actively thinking of, like I was telling my band and, you know, my co-producer, like I was like, we're making a pop record. That's what we're doing here. And everyone kind of like, I don't think they really believed me that that's what I wanted to do. Like, I don't think people really understood what I was talking about. But I meant it in myself, and I really thought Tried to Tell You was like a pop song. Like I was like, I just wrote like a, you know, like a Bee Gees song, you know, like that's what this is for, right? And I think that for me, and maybe that was, you know, it's like with the self-titled, like I was like, this is a rock and roll record, and it isn't really, but I think that word spoke to me as a person, because I just think a lot about like, what are songs for, you know? Like I like really esoteric music that doesn't appeal to that many people. But I also love the way that, you know, certain songs have this place in society where it's like you hear a song like on the street coming out of a car or like at the Value Village or like in the grocery store. Like the way that music, I think the coolest thing about accessible music, I'm not saying that my music is a pop song, because I know that pop music is like, you know, Rihanna at this point. But you know, an accessible song that anyone can understand is like, it's like this Trojan horse. Like it travels, it goes, it gets into people. And I was thinking of that perspective of like, if I had a chance to like say sentences, you know, into people's hearts, you know, through the medium of like accessible songwriting, like what would I want to say? So that was, I think, where I was coming at it from. Yeah. Having a bit of a sort of self-conscious perspective, like in that song in particular.
Yeah, but it seems to be working. I mean, that song, even, it looks like, you know, if I'm just judging by the streaming numbers, even more than Robert, finding its way. I mean, it's in the pop world.
It's pretty interesting. Yeah, and I mean, it's not, like I say, it's not pop, because like there's a whole universe of music that's far more listened to than what I think of in my old-fashioned way as pop, in terms of like, you know, clear melody. Mm. But Yeah, it's really interesting. Like the music is really traveling in a way that I've never experienced in my life yet. So it's pretty cool.
That's because it's great. It really is. It's really great. I know you have coming up, you have the upcoming live stream, right?
Yes.
So what do we expect from that? I mean, is this, are you going conceptual on this or is it just going to be sort of storytellers?
Man, I mean, it's complicated. Like, you know, it's a logistical nightmare at this point with lockdown restrictions and social distancing and, you know, how to be spaced in a room correctly for COVID and yet for sound and yet for lights and yet for video. So I feel like I'm a producer right now, but yeah, it's going to be the album band, which is going to be really cool because it's a really cool band and we never, you know, we made the album and then we haven't been able to really play since. So I'm excited to play with them. And then, yeah, I'm going to try to build some other elements into it. So it's more than a show. I mean, I think a lot of people don't understand with live streams. Like they're like, they think that musicians should just be able to segue easily to performing on the internet without understanding. It's actually like really difficult to, it's another medium. It's like being asked to master another medium unexpectedly without the finances it takes. Anyways, that's aside from the point, but I'm excited about it. And I'm excited mostly to play with that band and just to feel their energy in the room again.
I'll be looking forward to that too. And whatever comes next. I mean, now knowing this is sort of, again, you know, something that you've had almost in the rear view for a couple of years as it's just finally getting released. I'm curious as to where you're going to go next because I know everything's been a bit different every single time. So I'm such a fan.
Yeah, totally. It's interesting. Well, and it's interesting too, because I have made another piece of music, but with this record, it just looms so large. It's been hard to, it always takes the record coming out to like finally be able to move past it. So I'm looking forward also to the next thing.
Well, until then, you've got an amazing record here with Ignorance. Thank you so much for the music you've done. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it today too.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Big ol' thanks to Tamara. The Weather Station's new record is called Ignorance. Thanks to you again for checking out this series. Do hit that subscribe button, please, please, please. Anywhere you like to get your podcast from, but you can also do it at the usual spots. iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, YouTube has the video version if you want to see us talking to each other and relive it in great visual glory. After all that, after you subscribe, head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern. It's an hour full of song premieres and music news and anniversary spins and bonus interviews. It's a whole lot of fun, and we do lots of big themes, too. It's 6 p.m. Eastern every weekday at WFPK.org. Consequence of Sound has your music and film news. You can also find me on the social media spots, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, all three of them at Kyle Meredith. Please do like and follow along over there as well. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.